Hello everyone and welcome back to the Donkey's Garage for Season 2, Episode 30, Part 2, Racing and Interlagos. So last week, right after the sprint race, I made an episode covering the sprint weekend. This second part is fully dedicated and exclusively to the race itself. So that includes the qualifying on Friday and the race itself on Sunday. So the qualifying results were Max, Leclerc, Stroll, Alonso, Hamilton, Russell, Lando, Sainz, Perez, Piastri, Hülkenberg, Ocon, Gasly and Magnussen. So the qualifying on Friday was a bit difficult for the teams to actually settle down and find the qualifying pace because there were changing conditions. And namely, there was a wind that was bringing some heavy clouds, and they were predicting rain, and they were certain it was going to come sooner or later. The question was, when was it going to be? So all through the qualifying period, the teams were trying to get out there and try to settle up as soon as possible, just in case the rain would hit hard, and then you would be unable to do a qualifying lap in dry conditions. So the first part during Q1, it kind of took place in the ordinary way. There was the threat of rain, but still it was considerably far away. Nothing too major happened. The teams were able to run the ordinary schedule, so that's what happened. So you get into Q2 and the forecast is predicting rain almost with immediate effect, and you're thinking, well, these you know, you have to set your time. Teams are a bit running like headless chickens around the paddock. They're trying to find the right place, because of course the track itself is evolving. So if you go too early, you're going to be on a cold track and events, essentially. If someone comes right behind you 5 minutes later, and let's say that there hasn't been rain, he's going to outperform you by very much, and then you're going to have to get out there again, and essentially all your strategy of getting out too early will have ruined the end result, because you won't have been able to maximize your performance on track because you got out too early. So it's a fine balance between getting out too early, getting early, not too early, and getting late enough to get the best conditions of the on track. And of course, the more drivers are on track, it gets warmed up, it's getting more and more rubby, and so on. So it's a fine balance to find. Some teams struggle with that, and one team particularly failed to do that and then pay the price in Q3, and that was McLaren. Both drivers qualifying very, very at the back, with Lando P7 and Piastri P10, because essentially they were waiting in Q3. Oh my gosh, is it going to rain? Is it going to rain? No, it's not raining, so let's hold a bit and try to wait to see what happened. And then by the time they kind of made the minds up, it was too late. It started to get really, really dark. It started to get really, really slippery out of there. And it was over. On the other hand, there were, I would say, two teams that saw it coming, that were a bit more, three teams, let's say, three teams that were a bit more reactive in that sense. And that was, of course, Red Bull, with Max getting out there in Q3, and then he went straight for a qualifying lap. He didn't wait. Although he felt he was not in peak performance, he still got out there and tried to set the best lap, and of course he did. Leclerc had the same mindset. He was like, I'm going to just do an early lap, even if at the end I have to get out again, but just to make sure I've got at least one lap on which to fall back. And so he did. He said that he felt terribly, that the car was really, the track was really slippery and so on. But still, it was enough because it secured P2. And then the team that also did a good job was Aston Martin with locking P3 and P4 with Stroll and Alonso respectively, because again they got out there and they said, okay, we don't really know what's happening, but just let's do something. Let's just block at least a lap time so that we have something to fall back on. For the rest of the teams, unfortunately, the case was not so good. They got out one lap too late, and by the time they were mid through sector, the conditions started getting really, really horrendous, and they essentially had to forfeit their chances and to accept just a slow lap as a qualifying lap. So really interesting. Also, it was quite interesting to see and quite formidable to watch how quickly the conditions can change at Interlagos. It was incredible to see how it was more or less sunny. I mean, it did look just fine, like a dry and nice Sunday. And then out of the blue, some storms came and it kind of hovered over the track suddenly, and it got just dark. It was nighttime. So the teams were at the end caught by these bad luck. The drivers did say, I mean, it's getting evidently to a point where we cannot drive. I mean, it was dark. It was almost the nighttime conditions. So they cancelled the red flagged Q3, and in the end, the results that they blocked for Sunday for the grid was the ones I mentioned before, with the, I would say, with the very phenomenal work by Max, Leclerc, Stroll, Alonso. Also, the two Mercedes P5 and P6, good result overall with a car that I will mention in greater detail later, but it was a car that struggled a lot and still managed to do a qualifying that was relatively decent. So now, the big part of the weekend, the actual race on Sunday. I did say there was going to be a fabulous weekend. The track was amazing. The cars felt alive. And it did not disappoint at all. It was an incredible weekend. I think it was a memorable weekend to inscribe in the history books, with performances that were out of this world by many, many drivers, and I will explain later. Some of you might think he's going to talk again about Alonso and how amazing he was, because I always talk about Alonso and because I am a big fan of this man. But I'm going to praise not only Alonso, because of course he did a great job, a great weekend, but also all the drivers that stood out and that showed how amazing they are behind a wheel, and it needs to be underscored. So let me start just by getting out of the way the most relevant fight that took place on track on Sunday. The fight for P3, it was a free-for-all fight between Alonso and Perez. Alonso was starting fourth, with Perez starting ninth. So the challenge was there, but who's to say that Perez could reach P4, could reach P3, or that he might get involved in an accident, or something would happen, or Alonso simply not be able in a position to put up a fight and slowly fall back to a more moderate position as the race went by. As a reminder, the Aston Martin had retired in Mexico because it was fighting, admittedly with some damage, but regardless of the lack of performance due to some damage incurred during the race, the Aston Martin was becoming a car belonging more to the back of the field, fighting for P15, P16, P16, P14 at best, but definitely not in the P10 anymore. This was a car that had lost its competitive advantage. They had lost the development race. They had clearly fallen into an abyss of unknown, where they were unable to identify what was missing. They were unable to bring updates countering the issues that the car had, namely top speed, namely drag. So I think for many of us, we had just accepted that the end of the season was going to be a painful fight at the back, probably fighting with Williams, probably fighting with the Alfa Romeos perhaps at the back, as we saw in Mexico. Of course, Formula One is a rude and merciless fight, and if you just lose your edge, there will be 10 teams that go by. So going into the weekend, there was not much hope for the team to do a good job. I mean, that's as simple as that. In the sprint race, they did a great job, and I did praise it. I mean, the car looked, the Aston Martin looked like it was alive, but it definitely wasn't a certitude that they were going to be fighting for podium during Sunday. And the question was these qualifying results the result of a aborted qualifying session, where they should have qualified far behind, but given that the qualifying got abruptly interrupted because of the red flag brought out because of the rain, maybe that would have hidden the true performance of the Aston Martin. Maybe it should belong to the back. But Sunday, you know, you play your best cards. So you're on the grid, and Stroll and Alonso, I'm sure they were keen on really testing the ground and see if it was going to keep up, because there must have been doubts inside the team saying, okay, we look like we've got some performance, but is it going to be sustainable over 72 laps? Is it going to be something that we're going to be able to keep up, or are we going to fall behind and teams eventually overtake us? Because of course they had the two Mercedes that had worked very, very well during Mexico. They had the McLarens, which are evidently far ahead of them in normal conditions at the moment. So everything was pointing at the direction where Aston Martin was just going to be fighting probably with Ferrari P8, P9, P10 at the back, at least. So off the line, Max has, what can I say, another amazing start. No issue whatsoever, just perfect Max. He was perfect on the sprint race start. He was just sublime again in the race start on Sunday. During the formation lap, I have to mention that Leclerc suffered an electrical issue, and he was out of the game before the race even started. So even though he qualified second, the spot was empty when the lights went out, because the engine had an issue, and on turn 6-7, I believe, he went against the barriers, and that was it for him. The press has reported that there was some electrical issue where the car shut down before it escalated into something more severe, probably a fire. Whatever it is, Leclerc could not take part at Interlagos. It was only Sainz representing the Ferrari team this time. So, off the line, Max just storms away. Okay. What can you do? Stroll and Alonso, they had I think a pretty bad start. They had some clutch issues. You could see it. A lot of drivers, also Sainz, had clutch issues. He did say over the radio, Sainz, that he was tired of this clutch and he was hoping and couldn't wait for the moment to bin it. But anyway, Stroll, Alonso had a poor start of the line. Hamilton got past, and you say, okay, it's over. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, Hamilton is already ahead of Alonso. Lando had a fabulous start. I mean, that guy, he was like a rocket. And yeah, I mean, already Hamilton is past Alonso. Lando is ahead of you. You might as well just forfeit and accept that you're going to slowly fall behind. But that's not the case. First corner, second corner, third corner, Alonso stays behind Hamilton, and by the fourth corner, he dives in and takes what belongs to him and places himself in third position. Stroll was the one that had a worst off situation. He lost the position and just stood behind Alonso, so it was Alonso Hamilton Stroll. He stayed there, but Stroll did a really good race. So for the rest of the race, it's just a moment of seeing, can Alonso keep the P3 and can Stroll keep up and be part of the group? He did. I mean, Stroll did an amazing weekend. I have to stress it. I have to mention it 1,000 times if needed to really reflect how good he was during the whole weekend. He was solid. He was the sort of it looked like the sort of team you would have wanted from the beginning of the year, with the two drivers together, stuck together. It was just the kind of team effort that you need, where you bring points on both ends of the garage. You bring a good set of points that are needed, and you show that the car is being developed and is being, you know, used and put to good work by both sides of the garage. It's really what you want from a team. Stroll had an amazing weekend. And so by the end of the race, you could start to see how Perez had made up his positions all the way to essentially reach P4. And it was a game of tyres. During the second stint, Alonso had been a bit more conservative. He had been waiting for that moment. Am I keeping tyres? Am I saving some tyres just in case? And it did pay off. As a result, in the last stint, it was really, really close. They told him, you can stand a bit. But in the end, Perez got in. And in order to cover Perez, Alonso went to the pits to fit new tyres. He had a new set of tyres, and it was just a bit fresher than Perez, who just had a set of used tyres. And at that point, you're like, oh, this is going to be interesting, because of course Alonso has fresher tyres, not by much, just 3-4 laps, but it's still different. I mean, it still feels different. So he's able to put them, to really nurture them from the beginning of the race, and it looks like he's going to have that competitive advantage. For the last 10-15 laps of the race, I was suffering, because you could see Perez, he was coming. He was coming, and he was really, really coming. I mean, that dude, he was not waiting. He was hunting, and when Perez hunts, you can be sure he's no man to feel pity for. I mean, he's aggressive. He's just a bold driver, and he's got big shoulders. I mean, if he's got to really kind of push his way through, he will do it. So, 10 laps to the end, you've got Alonso, you've got Perez, and you've got Stroll. And Stroll is just waiting there. He doesn't have the power at that point, the tyres at that point, to go annoy Perez. So Alonso is by himself. He's just having to really manage what's behind him. And what's behind him is a Red Bull driven by Perez, who is no bad driver at all. So Alonso is like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? So at the beginning, he's playing Perez with the classic use of tires. So if you get too close to a car, I've said it 1,000 times, you overheat the car because there is no fresh air coming into the engine bay. You've got a lot of heat, a lot of turbulence is coming into your car. So your front end tires are going to overheat, your brakes are going to overheat. Everything is going to feel strange. So ideally, as a driver, what you want to do is to get behind a car, be for a maximum of 1 lap, 2 laps, and then get past really quickly before you overheat. And this is the plan that Red Bull had. They were like, okay, no worries. We'll get behind. We've got the last stint, just 10 laps to go. Perez, go full out, turn on the engine, and Alonso will be just an anecdote of the race. So Alonso is like, okay, no worries, no worries. I'm going to show you what the games looks like. So they are in about a gap, 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds. And Alonso is playing with that gap for about 10, 6, 7 laps. He gets a bit closer, then tries to get away, put some distance again. Perez gets a bit closer. About 5 laps to the end, the Aston Martin wall is like, well, Alonso, it's time to hammer down. Let's try to open the gap and make sure that we have some breathing space to the end. Otherwise, it's going to be really difficult. And Alonso is like, perfect. I've got some tires. I think I can go for it. And the Aston Martin, I have to say, the car looked really, really settled. It looked like the car at the beginning of the year. It looked like a solid car. It was on rails. It didn't look nervous. It looked like it was comfortable around those bloody corners. So, an amazing track to be at. Amazing, absolutely fabulous to watch. I mean, it's fantastic as a track. It gives the opportunity of great overtakes. It gives the opportunity of an amazing variety of racing lines, and that is what is great. I mean, you want tracks that are magic, and that's what we need. So 5 laps to the end, Alonso is starting to feel a bit nervous. I mean, what can you say? Perez is breathing behind him, and Perez, I mean, he must have been nervous also. He must have been saying, this bloody damn old Spaniard, why is he still ahead of me? And Alonso is using all the tools he's got in his toolbox, and he's using the Interlagos track in a way that nobody had ever seen before. He's using racing lines that are not written in the history books, using absolutely everything he could imagine to outperform the bloody Red Bull. He's using the weaknesses of Perez driving to his advantage. And how do you say you do that? Because you can think of that, but how do you apply it? But Alonso goes further and says, I know my own disadvantages, I know my own weaknesses. So how do I combine Perez's weaknesses with my strengths, weaknesses, and try to make mix them together, so I have a racing line that essentially allows me to block where I am faster, but I know that I cannot get overtaken, so I let Perez come close enough so that he overheats, he restarts, and he's stuck behind me, having just to wait for me to get on. And on the parts where he's just going to slam the accelerator, and I'm not going to have any chance whatsoever, at that point, I'm going to take a racing line that is, I'm just going to be able to put traction way ahead of Perez. So, what happens is essentially that on the first sector, the Aston Martin is a bit more comfortable. Second sector, the Red Bull is just outperforming the Aston Martin. And the key part is sector 3. What do you do in sector 3? It's a big, bloody straight, essentially. You get out from turn 12 all the way back. It's just basically straight. uphill straight, but it's straight. With a bit of bank, but it's straight. And the Aston Martin is not so comfortable on straights. Why is that? Because of the dragage. It doesn't have the top speed that the Red Bull does. I mean, at the end of the straight, the Red Bull was about 25k faster than the Aston Martin. And that is a lot. That is bloody a lot. So Alonso is just against the wall in a situation where it's just a catch 22. Whatever he does, it seems he's going to lose. There is a famous Japanese game also that I cannot remember the name now. Kuma something. Where you're placed in a situation where you have to make choices that are impossible because no matter what you do, you lose. Kobayashi, I think, something like that. Koma something. And this is just a situation where Alonso just had, he had eventually lost the game before he had even started. All that he could hope for was to hold Perez as long as possible, give us a show as good as possible. But in the long run, he just had to accept he was going to lose that position. Because for the longest time, it looked like Perez was not going to be able to reach within 15 laps Alonso. But by the time he got close enough to get past Alonso, it was done deal. So Alonso, as I said, is using turn 12 as his hunting ground. At that point, he's getting out of the racing line that you would usually go for the inside curb and just slam the accelerator all the way up the hill, where he goes on the outside and he's carrying far more traction through that corner on the outer line, as a bit as if you were doing the wet racing line. And he's got traction far earlier. And that means that if he can put traction far earlier on the first section of that long straight, relatively long straight, he can just get ahead of Perez sufficiently far to create a gap that the other guy is going to have to recover just by using horsepower. And even if he's got a 25 difference and top speed, 25k difference in top speed, it's just not going to be enough. And that is exactly what he did, lap after lap after lap. But two laps to the end, Alonso made a mistake where he was just not as fine as tuned with the steering wheel, and he traction off the last corner before the straight was not so good. And Perez saw it coming. Perez got out of the last corner before the straight at just 0.3. And he was behind. It was done deal. Perez slammed the accelerator up the hill. And by the first corner, buff, Perez did it. He overtook Alonso the way it was predicted it was going to happen. It was an amazing fight to watch. An amazing fight to watch. Perez, he was just perfect. He was patient. He was persistent. He was consistent. He was everything you needed from him that day. He did it. He kept behind and waited for Alonso's mistake, and he capitalized on it. Nothing else to say. At that point, Alonso is behind corner one, corner two, corner three. He tries to stay behind, but it's too late. You can't do much more. Now you've got a Red Bull in front of you. There isn't much you can do. So at that point, we all accepted Perez P3, Alonso P4. And we were happy because he had given us, I think, one of the best fights in bloody history. he had shown all the tools there are to be in this toolbox that the drivers have. He had used everything: racing line, precision, steering, acceleration, braking, absolutely everything you can imagine. And last lap, they're coming back on the main straight, and Alonso is just behind Perez, and he's really close, but he's not close enough to overtake and to dive in. So what does he do? Alonso brings out his toolbox and says, "Perez, wait a minute, my dear, because I haven't really shown you what 20 years in Formula 1 look like. I have driven against the likes of Schumacher, I have driven against the likes of Lewis, against Vettel, against Button, against Barrichello, against so many bloody drivers that were amazing, that were just out of this world. And I'm going to show you that all through the years I've noted the little skills. I put up, you know, a nice little list of things to do in case I am outpowered, as it has been often the case with his cars." So Alonso is on the main straight behind Perez, last lap. He doesn't have the horsepower, the top speed to go for a pass on the main straight. Neither is he close enough to go for a dive on turn one. So Alonso says, "No worries, boy. Let's use our mind and put it to good use. Our brain and put it to good use." So he shows his car a bit to the left and forces Perez to cover the inside. And that is where the masterpiece begins. The first stroke on this beautiful painting is set. Alonso has forced Perez on the inside of turn one, which means he cannot go for the late apex. And if any of you have ever driven a car on a track, you will know that racing line is really important. Racing line is what defines your capacity for acceleration. If you've got a bad racing line, you have to wait to place your car where it should have been in order to accelerate. So Perez is off the line, and as he's going to go attack corner two, he's just got to make a maneuver that it requires too much steering. And then there is the third section of these S-synthesis. And again, Perez is on the wrong foot. He just can't. I mean, he's got a great car, he's got everything, but he's just started the procedure, the first part of this section, on the wrong foot. And he's just dragging this move all through the section. And Alonso is doing the reverse. He's saying, "I am going to sacrifice all the first and second corners for the purpose of having the best exit out of turn three." And that is what he bloody does on a perfect masterpiece. He does the first section, second curve, and then he attacks the third corner with a master stroke, where he's just essentially on a straight line before he even hits the third corner. Out of first corner, he's already full speed. His pedal is all the way down. Whereas Perez still trying to get his car kind of turning, and he hasn't got the traction off the corner as of yet. Alonso gets behind him, a slipstream like you've never seen before. Down the straight, Perez is starting to sweat. He moves, sways side to side, trying to cover Alonso's slipstream. Alonso again uses a classic movement where you show your car to the left, you force Perez to commit to the left, and then you block him there because he cannot go back to the other side of the track because of the limitation on how many times you can wave on the straight. So he's blocked on the inside, and Alonso, what does he do? He dives on the outside to the right, and there he goes. Turn four, he dives in, late braking, and he's on the outside. Perfect driving. Out of turn four, he overtakes Perez like you've never seen before. Yes, he's done it again. He's overtaken a Red Bull on track using an Aston Martin. Amazing to watch. It was just a masterpiece. But the lap is now over. You've got section one of the track, sector one, yes. But you still have to do the main straight, which is where the sweat really gets intense and where you know he's just going to do the same. Perez is going to do the same operation he did earlier, which is just going to get a better traction potentially out of turn one and then get across the line. Alonso does the perfect sector two, where he's just blocking Perez behind. Perez is just sweating like you've never seen him before. He doesn't know where to put his car. He's just trying to say, for God's sake, I've got to overtake him now, no matter what. And he's trying to find the smallest gap in order to dive in. But Alonso is just blocking him behind and say, boy, you can't overtake me in sector two. You could, but I am just going to, you know, have big shoulders at this point. Absolutely fantastic. But we arrived corner 12 again, which is where things get complicated, because Alonso has blocked Perez off in sector 2, but he's got Perez breathing down his neck for sector 3, the main straight. And Perez's tires are now overheating like they've never overheated before. His engine is turned up all the way up. Everything is at maximum power. And Alonso is like, okay, this is for Queen and Country. This is for bloody Spain and I don't know, for my pride, if anything. And his team tells him over the radio, you've got full power. You've got the whole house behind you. Like, we've given you all the horsepower there are in this bloody engine bay. So go for it. Full engine map, attack, everything, hammer time, call it whatever you want. Off turn 12, up the straight, they are just next to each other, essentially. Alonso admittedly has a better traction off the corner again, where he's just able to create a sufficient gap at the beginning, where Perez just misses a few meters. I mean, probably 4 or 5 meters, not even, probably a couple of meters, 3 meters maximum. But that is enough to create the difference between P3 and P4. Up the hill, and the Aston Martin is going to blow up. That engine is giving all it's got. And Perez's engine is giving all that it's got. Perez stacks behind Alonso's slipstream. He's just behind. And Alonso is just holding, crossing his fingers so that he can get and see the checkered flag before Perez does. And that is exactly what happens out of this world scenario. Alonso by 0.053 tenths of a second secures P3 ahead of Perez. It was an amazing fight to watch. Most certainly one that will go down in the history books, because I have to say Alonso was amazing, but the other hero of the story is Perez. Perez fought like a true, valiant driver against one of the best drivers in history. And he put up a fight, a very laudable fight. He drove like you've not seen Perez drive that many times. I remember him driving greatly many times. He's driving even fabulously many times. He's put up a fight against Max sometimes. He's fought Lewis many times. I remember Turkey last time where he had an absolute crazy defense against Lewis. But this fight at Interlagos between the two of them, it was a fight in equal conditions. He was not protecting in order to advantage his teammate, Max Verstappen. No, he was fighting for his own position. And he gave it all. And they both are to be commended for that. They did a fabulous result, both of them. And it could have been one way or another. To be honest, if Perez had come P3, it would still be the fight of this, I think, of the year and probably of the last years. And it was amazing to watch. Another very honourable mention was Stroll, who did a fantastic race. As I said, he looked like the sort of teammate that you would like to have in a team. He was solid. He just stood behind in P5, but he had the pace all through the race. He didn't make a mistake. He just did his task to perfection. Very nice to watch. Sainz in P6, well, that was a bit heartbreaking because the Ferrari did have a very difficult weekend. They had some cooling issues that they couldn't really solve. Then as a result, they had to kind of stay on the back foot all through the weekend. And in spite of these difficulties, Sainz was able to bring the Ferrari P6. I think it was, a commendable result for the team. For him, he shows once again that when things go wrong, he's still able to bring a set of fresh points to the team. He's a consistent driver. He's the sort of drivers you do appreciate in the team. With Gasly P7, very good drive by the French driver, and like his teammate, who I would say is very much a disappointment. Gasly showed patience, but he showed also driving skills. He was analytic about the race, and when it mattered, when he had to put his foot down and really attack and go on attack mode, he did it. Really good to see him. It was great. The Alpine looks a bit inconsistent from time to time, but Gasly has been able to be, I think, the positive note to the weekend for Alpine. Hamilton, very painful race for the team. The team principal, Toto Wolff, mentioned that it was probably the worst race they had ever had in terms of how bad the performance of this W14 was at Interlagos. They were coming with hopes that it would be a great weekend because they had won in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. They actually had a staring performance last year with the W13 in spite of the poor car it was, and yet they were able to outperform everyone. Russell won after a daring race. Very good performance last year, but this year it was just a debacle. Nothing to celebrate. Hamilton, in spite of it all, was able to bring a P8, which I think is again shows the amazing skills that these drivers have. When you are amazing, you're this great, you're able to really shadow the weaknesses of your car. It's something that Schumacher was able to do, that Senna was able to do, that Prost was able to do, that Nigel Mansell did, that Hamilton does, that Alonso has done so many times. It's something amazing to watch these great drivers turn bad cars into average cars. With Tsunoda bringing the car P9, great result. If you think how if you put this into perspective, the AlphaTauri was fighting at the back. Admittedly, they have had a better car for the last couple of races, but still, it's amazing how good they've been. And Tsunoda has been the driver, I think, that has the revelation, that has sort of matured, that has turned like from is like the butterflies, that is turned from this swarm where you didn't really say much from him, and into a butterfly, into something to a driver that is more complete, that is more refined, that is able to really lead the team forward. With Ocon P10, but who cares about him? With Sargeant P11, which is really good result for the Williams team, especially after the accident between Albon and Hülkenberg and Magnussen at the start of the race. Albon lost the car after a crash that involved a series of cars, namely his and the Haas, Magnussen's Haas. He had to retire, Albon, and as a result, only Sargeant was representing Williams, and he stood up, he did a great race, he was consistent, and he brought the car to P11, which I think overall speaks highly. Is the sort of confidence that you have to build weekend after weekend, and I am certain that if it continues like that, he will be able to find a ground where he's able to then grow as a driver and bring value to the team. With Hülkenberg P12, Ricciardo P13, which if you compare Tsunoda was P9, so tells you how good Tsunoda was. Of course, you have to take into account the fact that Ricciardo was hit by a tire during this accident between Albon and Magnussen that brought out the red flag in lap one, essentially. Ricciardo had to change the rear wing, and of course, I would imagine that you would lose some confidence for the rest of the race, but that doesn't really diminish it's no prejudice to Tsunoda's great work. Piastri P14. Piastri was not there at all during the whole weekend, whereas Lando found the performance to make it to P2 after a stellar performance again, which I will mention in a second in due course. Piastri was just not looking comfortable. He had some issues at the beginning of the race where during the red flag they had to change the floor because he had taken some damage, probably after some debris got under his car. But just overall, Piastri did not really look as comfortable, neither during the sprint race or the race on Sunday. Now, what a surprise. Max and won the race. Max was perfect once again. He didn't wobble, he didn't get nervous, he didn't shake at all. He just showed his usual driving style where performance, 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 and nothing but performance comes out of him. During the first stint, there was a period where everyone was uttering that Lando was going to overtake him. Especially during the first few laps of the race, Lando was within the 1 second gap, and Lando reached a point where he was just not 0.4 behind. Lando was really close. Turn four, Lando looked like he could dive, but Max had one little ass up his sleeve, and that's what he did. The team will mention, Max, Lando's behind you, he's really close, how about we do something? And then Max said, yeah, no problem. Okay, let's put an end to this parody where people think we are going to struggle and to get in trouble. And Max then pressed the accelerator, and within 6-7 laps, he had to open the gap to 6 seconds. And then Lando was just in no man's land for the rest of the race. He was just stuck P2 with a continuous attempt to get closer to Max. He kept trying, he kept using all he had under his sleeve, but he just couldn't. During the last stint of the race, Lando looked like he could bring that gap down to a more reasonable gap, but at the end, Max was sovereign again over Interlagos and won with distinction. Lando secured P2 after a great result. I mean, fabulous start of the line. Great, amazing start anyway. Driving, consistent, very good by him, I have to say. I think he's most certainly one of the best drivers that is now on the grid. I would definitely dare to place him on the top three on the grid. Top four, if you push me. I have to, of course, to put on that list Max. I have to put on that list Hamilton. I have to put on that list Alonso. And I think Lando has the skills to be on that list. Piastri is most certainly will be on that list in the future, but I think at the moment Lando is the better driver in between those two. For the rest, honorable mention to Russell, who had to retire after a car that just couldn't keep up, overheating all through the race, and in the end they decided to save the engine and retire the car. Gutting, of course, to watch Russell retire, but it was a painful race for both drivers, for Hamilton and Russell, and in the end perhaps it was better to save the engine as much as possible, save the parts for the last two remaining races. Next week, Las Vegas, and then Abu Dhabi on the 27th. Who am I going to award the Donkey's Garage this week? I have to go with Ocon, who, again, is a disappointment. Again, lives in a parallel universe where nothing is his fault and he's just victim, if you can say so. I've never liked this driver. He's fast, he can be very, very aggressive, but I'm not certain he belongs on Formula One. I'm very harsh on him. Usually people might say that it's because of his relationship with Alonso, but nothing could be furthest from that. It's just that he shows such a blindness, such a uncaring attitude towards the grid. His narcissist style is something I cannot bear. With that said, thank you very much for listening. I hope you have enjoyed this description of the events of the fight that took place at Interlagos. But I want to stress this as a last point, how great so many drivers were at this track, and the catalyst to all this happening, I think, is the track. You have good tracks, you have good races. As simple as that. It's a track that is fun to drive, that offers the opportunity for amazing passes, for amazing overtakes, for amazing strategies, that devours tires so you're forced to use different strategies. It's something that the FIA has to look into if they want to mimic this sort of weekend where people are passionate, where people are go crazy about, where social media absolutely goes crazy about, if they want to keep this happening. With that said, thank you very much as always. Don't forget to share, don't forget to subscribe, don't forget to leave a comment, and I will come back to you for Las Vegas.